Hi there. Welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm your host, Devin Kunzman, toddler expert and founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little one's development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am so thrilled to be here with Dr. Tracy Dalgleish, psychologist, author, and couples therapist. Welcome, Tracy.
Hi, Devin. Thank you so much for inviting me into this year's conference. And thank you to everyone who's joining us here.
I'm just so excited for you to be here. And before we dive into all things co-parenting and relationships, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit more about yourself and your work, because there might be some people watching that haven't met you before.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm here in Ottawa, Ontario. And one of the things that I like to share with people is that my work really started to change once I became a mother. So I have two young children at home, and I can remember sitting in the basement, nursing my daughter in the depths of the winter and having a toddler also running around and just really being dissatisfied with the discourse available for people around what it means to be a partnership once you have children. And I myself even felt completely thrown for a loop to see how our relationship changed when we became parents. Despite working with people in session, working with couples, I was surprised how our relationship changed. And so from that moment, I decided I want to reach more people. I want to see people outside of my office. So I'm already seeing individuals and couples in my office, helping them live meaningful lives to feel good about themselves. But also the work that I started to do was my online webinars and programs, mostly for parents to help them feel connected and close and to navigate these really difficult seasons together.
And it's so needed because, I mean, I can say even for myself, like, yes, my relationship dynamics changed when you have a baby. And I think that it's something that maybe in the back of our minds, we think, yeah, of course, things are going to change once we have a baby, once we have a second child, a third, who you know, however many children. And at the same time, it's hard to like tangibly understand what those changes are going to be like until they actually happen.
Yeah. And I think already you're bringing up this really important point is that first, we can't prepare for it. There's no way that you can prepare your relationship in all of the things that you need to do for what's going to come, because you don't know who's going to show up. You don't know what temperament your baby's going to be. You don't know what sleep is going to look like. You don't know how your own mental health is going to be after having a baby. So that's one piece. But then I think the other piece is just how much shame there is around relationship distress. Rarely are we talking about just how hard it is on our relationship when it comes to the parenting journey. Openly, people will share on social media and in their blog posts and on other forms of media that parenthood is hard. You know, your toddler's having the meltdown in IKEA. I can remember the first one of my sons in IKEA, and it felt like everything narrowed down on me. And people openly talk about that. But rarely do we openly say to our friends or post on social media, wow, we're struggling in our relationship. And so I want to normalize for everybody listening today that we know from research, 67% of couples experience a significant dip in their marital satisfaction, their relationship satisfaction in the first year after having a baby. So that's more than half. It's really important to acknowledge that. And then the other piece that goes with that is that usually we start to see an improvement after 3 years. Even if people aren't doing things, things start to improve around year three when baby reaches three. And then I do notice more of an upswing around age seven for relationships. Age seven.
Yeah. Wow. And I don't know. One time I heard this statistic that like a popular time for getting divorced is around 7 years into a relationship. I don't know if that is like a real statistic or holds true, but when I hear you say around a child being 7 years old, I don't know, that came up in my mind.
So what's I can speak clinically. I don't know that I've heard the 7-year itch. I don't know what the research is around that, because I think the context really depends. Did the couple have kids? What age did they marry at? There are all kinds of variables. But I think the important thing there is couples tend to land in my office when their kids are around 4 and 6 or 5 and 7, assuming they have 2 children. And the reason for this is because they are just coming up for air. My child is finally a little independent. They can go to their room and color on their own or sit at the table and play at the Play-Doh. And then here I am looking at my partner. Do I feel connected to them? Do I feel close anymore? And knowing just how busy those earlier years are, those toddler years are, sometimes our relationships get on the back burner. We just don't have time to address it.
Do you feel this is what makes toddlerhood such a challenging developmental period for relationships and co-parenting?
In the sense of like that independence piece, that there isn't the independence. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
You are literally having to give so much from your cup. Everybody has their own cup, what they can give to other people in a day. And because your little one needs so much from you, they're very dependent on you, not in a bad way, not in an unhealthy way, in a very normative developmental way. And what happens then is you're giving and giving and giving so much to your toddler that then you have nothing left for the other people. Something I do with my couples in my office is I get them to write out on, like, to draw a circle on a piece of paper. So we divide the paper in half and we have 3 sections. And the question is, show me how much time you give to you, the individual, you, the couple, and you, the family. And then being able to compare their bubble sizes is often really surprising for them, where oftentimes the mother will show she spends more time in family and then a little bit more in couple and very little in self, which is challenging because if you're not giving to yourself, it's incredibly hard to show up connected and aligned in your relationship. But then also times we also see the other parent in a heterosexual dynamic, but those are most of the couples that show up to my office. We also see more time for self and then maybe a bit more for couple and a little bit for family. But it's that mismatch that can make it difficult and create some of that disconnection.
I want to really want to thank you for normalizing the challenge and struggle that parents can find themselves in after having kids, and the challenges that they're facing inside of co-parenting. And I'm curious what you think are some of the most common myths and misconceptions about really building a strong relationship, especially when it feels like everyone needs something, and there is such little, what feels like such little time to give on a daily basis.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest things that show up in terms of this myth, this is the number one, is that we have to do it in exactly the same way. Like, in order for us to be a strong parenting team, we must both be on this conscious parenting, gentle parenting journey. We have to parent in the same. And I think that creates a lot of difficulties in the couple relationship. So, when we're talking about co-parenting, we're talking about the couple relationship. And what happens though is that then we're showing up saying, you need to do this way. You need to do that this way, right? So oftentimes one partner, and this is typically the mother in the dynamic, typically, not always, but the mother is doing all of the research. The mother is on the Instagram accounts. She's following all of the people. She's downloading the guide. She's listening to the podcast, right? That is most of, I don't know about for you, Devin, but it's most of my community.
Yeah.
That we are the information gatherers. And so what happens then is we come to our partners and say, don't do it that way. You have to do it this way. And we lose the ability. I mean, let's think about what it means to be a team. We don't show up in our work team saying, what are you doing? Don't do it that way. Do it this way. You need to organize, right? We often come together in a collaborative space with respect and kindness. And oftentimes, that doesn't show up in relationships. So I think one of the biggest things that shows up is that we have to do it the same. I think the other one that really shows up is that there is a right way. And what I mean by that is that Let's take about, let's even think of the example of what it means to validate and set boundaries, right? And so my way of validation is definitely going to be different than my partner's. One, because we're two different people. Two, because of all the information that I have and they don't. He doesn't have that information. And then three, because I'm a therapist. I'm going to bring in my therapist self, right? But I can't expect my partner to come in and do it in some right way. Validation is going to look different for everybody. How we set boundaries is going to sound different for everybody. And I think what I want to say here around this, because I know sometimes what we bump up against when we think of my partner and I are not on the same page, is when I'm talking about the things we're talking about today, I'm making the assumption that you are in a safe relationship, that you and your partner are not physically violent, that there is no emotional neglect, that there is not emotional abuse or sexual abuse in the home. And I think that's really important that Devin, you and I define that you we're talking about a safe relationship. And that when it comes to not safe, if there is physical abuse and emotional abuse, then you need to go and speak to someone and get help and find a way to protect yourself and also your children.
Absolutely. It's a very, very important point to bring up because everyone finds themselves in different types of relationships, in different stages of relationships, and it doesn't always look the same for everyone. And when we look at these myths, that coming up that there's a right way to do it, or that we have to like believe the same thing or do the same thing. What is the impact do you feel that these myths have on relationships? Like, what traps or cycles does it kind of plunge parents into in terms of their relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most common one that we're going to see showing up in the relationship, in the couple relationship, is the breakdown of communication and the breakdown of connection. So I start to see partners get into, we could talk about it from two different perspectives. We see partners start to get into the four negative communication patterns that Dr. John Gottman outlines in their love lab. So that is criticism, defensiveness, stonewalling, and contempt. And so we start to show up in our relationship saying things like, you never validate our child. You're always letting them jump on the couch. Right? So we're showing up in this very critical way. Or we might even tap into contempt, which sounds like, yeah, well, I can't expect you to support our child during bath time. Right? So there's like these, or the other one might be, I was really struggling last night and you didn't help out when our child was having big feelings, and of course you didn't. I just can't expect that from you, right? So we start, and I think what's important for people to remember is that once we lose this connection with our partner, we lose the ability to hold empathy, compassion, and understanding for each other. And so each day, what we want to make sure we're doing in our relationship is finding a way to connect our tree branches. We're trying to grow together because when we do that, when we feel connected, when we feel understood, close, seen, when we feel important with our partners, then we can problem solve. But the challenge is that during this busy season, I see parents start to do this, and then they're parallel, and then they're roommates, and then they're not connecting, and they're not talking about all of the things that are happening, not just with their toddler, but in their lives altogether. So, breakdown of communication is definitely one of the biggest things. But, Devin, I think the other one is this need to be right, right? Our egos can show up when it comes to our parenting journeys, right? And our ego says, is this the right way? Is this the best way? And because underneath that, the ego wants to protect this deeper fear for ourselves, which is, what if I'm screwing up my child? What if how my partner is trying to do this validation thing? What if how they respond to my kids is invalidating and they're going to be affected lifelong by that?
Yeah, and these are real fears that crop up in the back of our minds and sometimes in the front of our minds, and sometimes it just like always there like a flashing neon sign, and it can be challenging. And so what do you say, how would you support or advise parents to build a strong team, especially if they do have different parenting philosophies.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the most important things that we can do is we can first step back and look at the bigger picture. And one of the things I want to emphasize is that for people here joining us today, I know you're busy and you likely didn't get a chance to do this because unfortunately parents are not prepared to enter into this beforehand, right? We have our nurseries planned, our labor planned, our labor and delivery plans, who's visiting us at the hospital, what's in the nursery bag. And these things are not the top conversations that we have. So you have been going along day after day after day with a lot of your own thoughts and feelings, opinions, wishes, and your partner has had their own, and you haven't had a chance to talk about it. So acknowledging that what I'm about to share is not a one conversation, but rather an opportunity for us to continue to connect, explore, and grow. I mean, if you think about it, right, that the analogy of the onion, like we're trying to always peel back the layers and go inwards. I think that's an important analogy. So what does that look like? Let's first look at exploring your values and your roles. So values are the things that are really meaningful to you. So what might be meaningful is connection. Connection being, you know, we read story times at bedtime, or we all sit down at the table together, or who does bath time, right? Like those are important things for us to look at. What really matters? Because so often we can get caught up in the, okay, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. And then also looking at our roles. I think these are really big questions because it asks us to go inwards and to reflect on our past and our own experiences. Even though someone says, I had a great childhood, everything was fine when I grew up, we will all have things that we didn't like that our parents did. And a powerful question here could be asking your partner, what is something that you didn't like that mom or dad or your caregivers did? What is something that you want to make sure you continue to do with your children going forward? What are things that you don't want to do, right? So I think that's really important for us to step back and explore our internal histories, our own experiences, make them verbal for you and your partner to talk about, and then also talking about what kind of roles you want to play moving forward. So I think that's the first piece. But then I also think that when it comes to parenting situations, that couples forget to plan how to navigate those difficult moments. And I think one thing that we can agree on that's predictable in toddlerhood are transitions, are also bedtimes, are meal times, are getting out the door times.
Bath time.
Right. Yes. So, you know, it in some ways, stepping back and saying, what is not a surprise to us? Okay, bath time is, you know, such a hard time. So how are we going to tackle this, right? And one way that can be looking at this is looking at what's this piece that we're doing before? Make a plan together. Make a plan in terms of who's doing what. Who's the parent that's going to be doing this? And if things go off the rails and things start to struggle, what do you want me to do? The other parent who's not in bath time, what would you like me to do? I can think of several couples who have had the disagreement where it's like, I was struggling and our toddler was melting down and you didn't come and help. And the reply was, well, that's because the last time I came to help, you snapped at me. So then you said, I got it. And so, okay, I'm not going to show up for you. But if we have this before conversation, then we have a plan moving forward. We know what we need to do. And then during, what is the plan during? If your kids are having a hard time, what will you be doing during as a couple? Will you have a check-in? You know, is there kind of like a, hey, I need to be tapped out moment? Is there a looking over at each other? Is there a calling out to each other? So how can we signal for help? And then also after, which is like, let's talk about how that went. What can we do differently next time? What do you like that I did? What could we do differently? What could, right? Like it is a really important piece. I think the other piece too, Devin, is for us to look at exploring our own needs as parents. So as parents, I mean, we give so much to our children and meet their needs, but we also have needs. And those core needs are feeling recognized, feeling like we belong, feeling like we're important. And so you and your partner being able to step back, which I know for many people, so many people in my community say, this is such a strange conversation to have, but it's an important one, which is what are your needs around this? How are we doing as a team? What can we do to meet some of those?
The curiosity piece is just so powerful in any relationship, whether it's the parenting relationship, with your child, or the co-parenting relationship with a significant other. Curiosity, I think, is just one of our most powerful relationship tools that we have. And so, I hear you modeling this curiosity, and I think it's just amazing when we sometimes pause and take a step back. So I think that curiosity really oftentimes asks us to take a step back before we can take a step forward. And when we're willing to let go of being right, or willing to step away from the sense of urgency that this has to be resolved right this second, I think that curiosity can just open up a whole new world of what can be possible.
Absolutely.
So I have a lot of parents coming to me, saying things like, "All right, so, I'm really trying to, I want to parent differently from the way I was raised, and I want to use positive parenting techniques, but my partner still wants to spank our child. My partner still wants to use punishments, time out, and I'm not comfortable with that, and I'm feeling really angry at my partner. And quite frankly, I really just don't like them right now because our ideas of how to parent are just so vastly different. Like we can't even, we're not even in the same country right now."
How do you? So I'm curious, just so that people who are listening, and then if they want to play this later in front of other people in their household, how do you address when a partner is spanking? What do you say?
Oh, well, whenever I have a client who has a partner that's spanking, the first thing that I always recommend is coming in again with the curiosity, because if we come in and tell someone not to do something, then it's usually going to backfire. And oftentimes when a parent is spanking, it's because they are out of control and they feel out of control, and they want to try to get back in control. So they're trying to control their child. So the first thing that I recommend is the partner who's not doing the spanking getting curious, because getting curious about the other person's experience. So what happened back there? What did you think about what Sally did? What did you want to communicate? Things like that opens the conversation. And once the conversation is open, that's when I recommend, first of all, validating your partner and their experience, because someone who's spanking is in distress and that they probably need a little bit of love and support themselves. And then from there, presenting the information on spanking and bringing in the facts. Because I think that when we bring in facts
Facts
versus
first.
all of the emotions and what we are, what we think about it, I think when we start with the facts, the conversation tends to go better from there. So that's always a starting point. Of course, there's a lot more things, but that's a starting point of how we handle it.
I love that you do that, because I think what it does is, I think it takes the shame out of it as well, this like deeper shame. So, if your partner has gotten to the point where they have smacked a child, then I imagine there's a lot of shame underneath there. We don't enter into our parent-child relationship with the intent to harm our children. Most people do not, right? And therefore, what's underneath that is, I don't feel good. I lost my cool. I went too far. Right? So that's shame. And so if we come in saying, how could you? What, right? With all of the research, the facts, here's this, then they're going to shame spiral. And when we shame spiral, we can't take in information. And I think, Devin, what's really important about this is one of the common mistakes we make when it comes to being co-parents is we come in top down, right? I was reading this blog and this is what you're supposed to be doing. Here's this podcast. And they said you shouldn't be doing, rather than this bottom up, which again, let's go back to the fear we all hold is something within ourselves. It's within our own selves, right? I have the fear that if my child keeps crying like this, they're going to be made fun of because I was made fun of as a kid on the schoolyard. I have a fear that my child is so soft that they're just going to be bullied. I'm afraid that this will never end and I don't know what to do and I'm at my max, right? Like there are all of these worries and fears underneath that, that our job as a partner, as that co-parent is to come in and to be the team, to collaborate with them and to understand what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing is that we sometimes forget that we're all unique individuals, and it's sometimes hard to remember, at least it is for me, that my experience and like my thoughts, feelings, experience, present and past are not the same as my partner. And so sometimes we just get, I find myself getting so locked into like the way that I'm thinking that I'm like, oh, wait. Like my context for this is completely different than my partner's context for this. And I think that it's, yeah, something that we sometimes forget. And it's an important piece, especially whenever it feels like there's such a great divide between parenting philosophies that, and if that's causing a lot of arguments and things.
There was something that we put in place in our relationship when our son was born. And it is that when it comes to safety, we are not allowed to get defensive. So if I say the car seat wasn't tight enough to what it needs to be, instead of him being like, you can't just see what I'm doing right, or I know that, our job as partners on the other end of that is to say, thank you for letting me know. That was our non-negotiable around safety. And then for our other people, it is around coming to that non-negotiable of you won't harm my children in that way. And I think that's really important to find what that is. And so when we like take the smacking away, and the punishments, I think something that is really important to remember, and this is really hard as a parent. So again, this is about, am I safe and are my children safe? That's the first thing. And if the answer is yes, then I think the other thing is that we don't get to control the other person, but we have to do something with our children. And so we can go and have the conversation with them afterwards. We can go and build up resources. I'm thinking, you know, toddlers are a little bit harder on that in terms of what they're going to be able to understand, but you also are there to set the boundaries and to protect your children. And so if you see things escalating with your partner, then you step in and say, I'm going to be parent A, you be parent B, and I'm going to take over, you go for a walk, right? And so then that's, again, going back to that before, during, after plan. What's the before plan here? When you are starting to escalate and you feel like you're about to, you know, move your hand back to tap their bum, what are we doing? What's our plan? And again, not to shame them, right?
Yeah, the plan is so important. And so I love that you're circling back to that, because regardless of any parenting challenge, having the before, during, and after plan is so important. And it's not only, it's the plan that everyone makes together. And I think that there's something really great about if you can make it together with your partner, because then it kind of makes this, consent in a way. Whenever you have your partner's buy-in of like, how do you want me to intervene? How do you want me to tell you I'm uncomfortable with this? How do you want me to step in? How do you want me to ask you if you need support in this moment? And I think that whenever we can Again, come back to the curiosity inside of making the plan. It creates buy-in and consent. So then we know our partner's preference and how to intervene just in any challenge, you know, like say, like, you know, you're struggling to get your kid into pajamas or get their shoes on to go to school. And I think that part of the plan is like asking, like, hey, how do you want me to like intervene in these moments?
Yeah, I think that's important.
I love it. Okay, so let's see. So many more things I want to talk to you about. So I think that disagreements come up in the co-parenting relationship. And do you have some tools or tips in how parents can navigate disagreements in a way that really builds up the relationship instead of tearing it down? Are there like some other communication tools that parents can focus on or that can help them? Because sometimes I just find that when we get into a cycle of disagreements, it's hard to break out of the cycle, right? Because it's easy to just start seeing all the things that are quote unquote going wrong or your partner's doing wrong than to like see the positives, even though the positives are happening. It's the same thing with a child's behavior. You know, sometimes we get so focused on the behavior that we don't want to see that we completely miss when our child's having the behavior we do want to see.
I think we need a whole session just on this question, but I'm going to go big and then I'll go very small and specific. So big. So this is my bigger framework. And I talk about my four C's. So you've already said one, which is curiosity. We lose curiosity in our relationships. We really do. I mean, you think of when you first met and how curious you were and you'd ask lots of questions, right? That's the first C. The second one is compassion. We're really good at giving compassion to our children when they leave the boots in the middle of the floor. But if your partner leaves their boots in the middle of the floor, we're like, oh, I told you, put your boots away, right? And it's so interesting to see how we can validate and set loving boundaries with our children. And then we turn to our partners and we lose that, right? So compassion, giving that compassion to your partner is so important. The third C is connection. Connection is so important and we need connection. Connection is, and it's not about sexual intimacy. It's not just sex. It's also physical touch. In the mornings, do you turn to each other? Do you greet each other before turning to your phones? Do you kiss each other? Do you still greet each other at the door? Are you having a hug each day? And not just, you know, a quick little squeeze, a 30-second hug or a 6-second kiss, right? When we feel connected, those disagreements are easier to work through. We know that. The other piece within there, I'll save that for the next piece. And then the last one is collaboration. How are we a team? How do we show up for each other? Am I going to come and belittle you and say you did that all wrong? Well, on a team, that's not how you show up in a team. You don't show up to your work meeting saying you did everything wrong. You need to start over again and go read this book and listen to these 10 podcasts, right? You say, wow, it's true, right?
Right. I mean, it's I'm laughing because it's like, it's almost laughable because like there's no way we would show up to a team meeting like that. But it's true that this is oftentimes how we can show up in a partnership, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. And collaboration is, we're not meeting our bottom line this month, are we? Right? Like what do we need to do? We are in this storm right now. Or, you know, the idea what collaboration looks like for me is like, you're both coming out of the kids' room and you're like high-fiving each other and you're flopping on the couch being like, holy, that was a doozy. Right. But then like all of the distress shows up within that oftentimes. They're like, well, you should be able to handle it. And you did do this and you should, instead of just saying, yeah, that was really hard. So that's my bigger, higher level four C's, making sure those are part of your day-to-day, how you can connect with your partner. But I think when it comes to really the micro level, the biggest thing that you and I have already talked about is pausing. Every time you notice your mind going to that place, oh, there he goes again. He never does this, right? Notice yourself do that. Just pause. Ask yourself, what's going on for me right here? What's triggering me? Why am I going into this space? That's one piece. Pausing when you feel that reactivity, or that's the emotional mind that shows up. Because oftentimes in that place, when we are reactive, emotional, or triggered, we're not going to be able to communicate what's going on for us. Being able to be curious with yourself, what's happening, and then sharing with your partner. And one of the best ways, if all of this is so hard, the one thing you can share and take away is a fact plus feeling. When you yelled at our kids tonight, I felt scared. And leave it there. Because what we do in our relationships, we are so good at adding in everything else. And then, you know, it's like you're not thinking of anyone else. And then last week, and da da da, right? So we add in all of these examples rather than just keeping it to the here and now in this moment. And then that might build some understanding. Your partner might say, yeah, you know what? You're right. I totally get how you would feel scared. I did yell. And then you can jump into the let's make a plan for next time, right? Slowing down, fact plus feeling, asking questions. And really, this is about learning how to compromise. I mean, what are we doing in parenthood? It's not all your way, it's not all my way. How are we trying to co-create our worlds together? Which is about identifying what our needs are, our core needs, some needs that are non-negotiable, and then finding the wiggle room that works together.
I'm glad you brought up needs, because I'm curious how you support and advise parents who just might be feeling close to burnout and like they need support from their partner, just feeling like the mental and physical load of parenting, and they're not sure how to effectively ask for support from their co-parent. Can you speak a little bit to that? Because I know there's a lot of parents and caregivers out in our community that's just, you know, feel like so much weight on themselves, but aren't exactly sure how to ask for support in a way that also supports the relationship.
I want to emphasize this common thing that I see women particularly doing with needs, but general, all people do this. We don't vocalize what we need, so we don't put it out there. And we kind of have this narrative, they should just see me. They should just see that I'm exhausted and burnt out, so I shouldn't have to ask. You do need to ask. The other one is that we tend to share what we don't want to happen rather than what we do want to happen. And then we tend to be really vague on what we need. So again, Devin, remember at the beginning I had said, these are not one-time conversations. If we're trying to change things that's happening in a pattern that has been happening every single day, multiple times a day, it's going to take some time. So being able to say, can we sit down tonight and talk? Let's put our phones away and talk about how things are going for us. And we can each share. It's important for both people to share what's going well, what are we struggling with right now? And then being able to say to your partner, I know we are both doing so much right now. And acknowledging both of you, right? Because sometimes the objection to you want my help, but I'm doing so much, I'm exhausted too, right? I know we are both doing so much right now. And what would be most helpful for me is to have more time for me, which could look like I'm skipping out on bedtime every Tuesday and Thursday, right? So that could be the thing. But have an idea of what it is that you need. Because when you say to your partner, I'm so burnt out, I need help. They don't know what that looks like. And they don't know what would be helpful for you. But then the most important piece is the follow-up piece. So then when Tuesday night comes around, your partner has said, oh, okay, I guess I'll do bedtime. I really don't like doing bedtime on my own, but okay, I'll do it. Tuesday night comes around and your little one's having a hard time and you're like, oh, maybe I should stay. Can you leave? Can you hold that boundary for yourself and say, this is the time I have to go? And trusting that your partner will figure it out. And I know that depends on the relationship, on the dynamic in terms of where toddler is at, but what's got to give a little bit, right? Where can you carve a little bit of that out?
Yeah. And, you know, as you said, this isn't going to happen overnight, even though, of course, we all would love just to wave a magic wand and it's just poof, magically things are the way we envision, whether it's our the way we parent, our child's behavior, our co-parenting relationship, whatever it is in life, you know. And so it's really a series of micro steps that lead to a larger goal. And I know that when we're at the beginning of a journey, it can feel overwhelming to learn a new skill. And sometimes it can be hard to know where to start. So for all the parents and caregivers out there listening right now, what do you recommend as one action step that they can take today just to move the needle 1% and get started on that journey of creating that positive shift in their co-parenting relationship to build that really strong, united relationship?
In an ideal world, we would sit down tonight and have a 10-minute meeting, just 10 minutes, put your phones away and ask each other a few specific questions, which would be, what stresses are going on for you right now and how can I support you? What are you grateful for about our relationship? What do you appreciate about me? How can I support you in the coming week? And if you could change one thing about how things are going, what would that be? And if you have that conversation, you say to your partner, I want to have this conversation tonight. We're going to ask each other questions. And our only job is to listen to the response. Doesn't mean we're going to have a solution. Doesn't mean we know what's going to move forward. But this is just for us to get curious with each other. And maybe then we'll find a solution, maybe not, but not to get defensive, because that's the piece, right? Is that when we ask for feedback, we try to connect with our partners, they'll open the door and share something and say, actually, I'm overwhelmed. Then we get defensive and triggered as well and say, well, I'm overwhelmed too. You think you're overwhelmed? I've been up with the toddler every night and all the things, right? So, you know, I think there has to be, and we know this in terms of our mental health wellness, that when it comes to our mental health wellness, there's flexibility. Anytime we are getting rigid in the way we are doing things, our expectations, our thoughts, that's when we start to struggle. And so the wiggle room is not going from here to I am no longer doing bedtimes, I'm no longer bed sharing, I'm no longer nursing, all the things, right? But maybe it's I'm here and then maybe I'm leaving for 15 minutes, or maybe I'm outsourcing something, or maybe I'm calling someone to come over and play with the kids, or whatever that is, right? We're small things frequently.
Thank you. That's so supportive. And gosh, there's so many more things that we could talk about and dive deeper on. And we're going to have to save that for another day because our time's coming to a close. And I know, though, you have a gift that you'd like to offer our community and our audience. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So I know just how busy this time is, and also knowing just how important connection is. I have a brief PDF guide that will help you and your partner build that connection. So I've got questions in there for you that you can download and ask tonight, so you can use them now. And I also have a few daily rituals that you can put into place, because we know that in this busy season, we cannot put our relationship on the back burner. That is when you will experience more distress. We've got to find ways to build connection. And I always say it's not the big getaways. It's not going to be the night out, not with a toddler anymore, but it's going to be the small things frequently. So I've got that PDF guide. And if you need the website, it's drtracyd.com/toddlerhood. And then that will help you and your partner build connection and feel close again.
Thank you so much. That's going to be so supportive. I'm going to download that right away. is there any last words or something that you really want us to remember and take forth before you leave us today?
First, I'm really glad that everyone chose to jump into this session with us, because this means that your relationship is important to you. And we want to teach our children what it means to build a healthy relationship. It is not about telling our children how to find that person. It's about modeling it. We want to model what it means to repair with someone, what it means to go to your partner in front of your child and say, I think I was a little bit short earlier. I'm sorry. Can you forgive me? How can we move forward? Right? Modeling what it looks like to build healthy physical connection and sharing feelings and needs and boundaries in a really healthy way. So for you who are listening today, joining us, you know, I just want to acknowledge you spending this time here and prioritizing your relationship and trusting that by you doing this and building a more conscious relationship with your partner, you are also teaching your children how to show up in that way.
So true. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I'm also curious, where can everyone go to learn more? because this is just the beginning.
Just the beginning. I know we can't cover all of the communication strategies. So if you are looking to improve your communication and your connection, I teach all of the skills and tools I give my clients, which comes from evidence-based research and clinical tools in my Be Connected program. So you can find that on my webpage, drtracyd.com. What I love most from people who join us in these conferences is when they head over to Instagram, it's Dr. Tracy D. Send me a DM and tell me what stood out for you today. That is the most meaningful thing. And I love hearing from people.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the work that you do in the world. And just thank you for really supporting all of us in building relationships that bring us more joy. I'm so glad we could talk.
Thank you, Devin. Thank you for inviting me here.
Thank you so much. And to everyone watching, we'll see you again soon. Bye.